I've been wondering about this for a while now. It seems like we are thrown back into this regression. And
we are not thrown back.
No, but...
We are not thrown back. Humanity has taken a step backwards. We belong to God. We belong to the Creator, not to the creation.
Okay. Do we, until a proper unity can and oneness can happen, do we have to wait until the last straggler comes on board?
Nope. I actually wrote about this in this chapter in here. Many years ago, I came out of meditation with a sentence that really shocked me, which is, those who follow the light, follow the light. Those who follow the darkness, stay here. And which really shocked me, because I always believed completely in oneness. And it made a clear distinction that there is going to be a separation of the ways. There is kind of an evolutionary split between those who are working with the light and those who are caught in the density of this world. How that will play out over the next 100 years or so, I am not quite sure. I've seen a little bit into the future, but humanity is always full of surprises. There is this evolutionary shift into oneness, global oneness. It is not going back. It's already here. Unless something happens on the apocalyptic level, that there is no more internet, no more global transportation, and everybody goes back into a, not just a psychological tribal mentality, but into a physical tribal reality. As much as there is this isolationism, this regression being played out, since the turn of the millennia, we are in a global era. And there are those who are working with that not in a get-rich-quick mentality, which has actually created more division. I don't know if you read recently, the top 8 richest people in the world now own as much as the rest of the half of the world. 8 people own as much as 3.6 billion people. You know, that is the result of one aspect of globalization. It's actually created more division. It's created more exploitation. It's created more devastation. That's why I was so moved by Pope Francis when he talked about the cry of the earth and the cry of the poor. Globalization has actually created more exploitation and more poverty. There is a network of people who are working ethically with that awakening oneness in small groups in different parts of the world. And we are one of them. And this is very, very important. And one holds true to that principle. It is a central part of our practice and our awareness, the awareness of oneness, that we live from that place. It does help something in the inner worlds or in another dimension to come into existence in the inner worlds, to be born some different level of consciousness for the earth. It may not be reflected into humanity for centuries. There was the possibility for humanity as a whole to be part of that spiritual awakening, which I call awakening into oneness, or many people call unity consciousness, global consciousness. There was a possibility, maybe just a slim possibility, for humanity as a whole to wake up to what that would mean. And for example, when I was given all those visions, I was shown that there are technologies waiting on the inner planes. For example, completely free solar energy that is completely non-polluting. It's not complicated. All the technology is there waiting to be given to humanity. But if humanity can only receive it, if they are in a state of oneness, because it's technology that belongs to oneness. And there is a whole series of technologies. They're already designed. They don't have to be invented, they're designed. How light works, how... There are many forms of healing that belong to humanity, that could belong to humanity's next step in evolution. Healing with sound, healing with light, healing with... It's not complicated, it's just different. It belongs to a different level of consciousness. But humanity can't receive it in its present ego-centered collective consciousness. So maybe in 100 years' time, maybe in 200 years' time, we don't know. But at the same time, that doesn't stop this spiritual consciousness from evolving in its own dimension. Just as, and this is important that you realize, what I said to you is that whatever the toxicity in the outer world, it does not have to limit your spiritual evolution, the evolution of your soul and where it will go and what that means. It just is more and more difficult for it to be played out in this outer world. There is still, we don't know, because we haven't been there, what will happen in the next 20, 50 years. There is a network of people working towards a certain spiritual global consciousness. Whether that network will still be held, or whether it'll have to become more hidden, I don't know. And the work we're doing in the field of spiritual ecology is related to that. There are these two streams. Once you've seen the interdependence of life, once you've seen the interconnection of life, once you've seen that oneness, you can't not see it. But what was offered to humanity at a particular time, the greed, the desire, you know, for money, for power, took over. And that will now have to get played out. And it is regressing, so it goes back to a lower level.
I just would like to be around long enough to see it.
I thought but I would be, now I think even my son thinks he probably won't be, maybe my granddaughter will. Okay. It's not going to be in our lifetime now. No, that possibility is over. That curtain has been drawn. No.
Okay, that's what I was afraid of. But
yeah, no, unless the masters, for example, are allowed to really intervene, and until now they haven't been. You never can tell. The grace of God is infinite, but humanity has been given free will. I had hoped to be alive when the world came alive again. I had really hoped, because I remember what it was like when the names of creation sang in the wind. It was so beautiful. It was, oh my gosh. It was magical. It was, everything was alive. Everything was singing its true purpose. And humanity and all the different inner and outer worlds were in harmony. And it was beautiful. Oh. But that time's long past. And it could have come again, yes, but not for now. I had the misfortune to see what it could be like. But it doesn't mean we can't keep that consciousness alive for future generations.
I have a question about real responsibility.
Real responsibility.
In one of your talks, you said that when you take real responsibility for your incarnation, you do the zikr with every breath. You remember and you just do what you have to outwardly, inwardly. And I've found that if you struggle with discipline or time management or anything, if you really have that attitude where if it first solidifies in your attitude, then everything falls in place. But also in relation to what you've been saying today and just earlier now, you were talking about the breath and remembrance and that just being important. Would you speak more about taking responsibility for that and rather than, you know, we're told that the more you do it and with time, with practice, eventually that day will come when you're always doing it. But mm-hmm. when you said that statement that if you take real responsibility, then you do it, that's slightly different.
Look, there's something very basic here, which is taking real responsibility for your incarnation mm-hmm. from a spiritual point of view. And that requires, I hate to say it, a degree of spiritual maturity that very few people actually have. I mean, you can say it's unfair, but we're kind of not shown how important it is until it's either too late or you've got it. It's like the Sufi practice that every day could be your last day. And so you are going to live with that degree of commitment that is almost impossible to live with. Because life is also an adventure, life is also fun, life is also crazy, life is also mixed up. But like Jung said, the longest way is often the shortest way. It really has to do with attitude, followed by perseverance. And then Hakim At-Talmidi, who was one of the really very early superiors on the path, and he was also the first person to write a psychological treatise of Sufism, and the first person to talk about the awliya, he stressed perseverance. If you take real responsibility, you get access to the set of instructions that belong in the soul. Every soul comes into incarnation with a set of instructions. If you take real responsibility, the instructions come. If you're lucky enough to get a teacher, they tell you from time to time the instructions. Or you get a dream that tells you those instructions, and you just do it. If you knew how precious an incarnation is, if you knew how little time you have, even though you have as much time as you need. This is when I talk about the higher destiny or the lower destiny. If you take real responsibility, you can realize the higher destiny of your soul in this life. And I think there is nothing more worthwhile doing than that. And it includes all of the worldly experiences you actually need. And on this path, you get the inner and the outer. The work then is to do what you need to do and not to do what you don't need to do. What makes a human being take real responsibility? I'm not sure. I didn't have a choice.
Paisab got rid of your will.
I got broken.
Yes.
And then I got broken again, then I got broken again, but we don't do that to people anymore. It's not fair. Mm. It's not politically correct.
Well, it's really simple, really.
Oh, it's simple. Terribly simple and completely impossible, yes.
Don't say that.
Every book says you can't make it in one lifetime. And Bhaisab said you can.
He said
10 years, I think 20 years now, but I'm not. Times have changed and we have less attention span nowadays. Mm. Do you know, human beings nowadays, they have an 8-second attention span. And a goldfish has a 9-second attention span.